Right, should we start?
If you like.
Okay. Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, screaming into your internet echo chamber one painful episode at a time. My name's Jimmy and I voted to leave the EU in 2016.
And I'm Jazza, and after 2 years of building up resentment of all the British people who ended up magically finding Irish grandparents and therefore EU citizenship after Brexit, we've decided to invite in two actual Irish people onto the podcast so that I convince one of them to marry me. Seriously, you're not leaving until I get a proposal. We got,
I'm married already, so polygamy isn't a thing in Ireland yet, so Richie.
Hey, Richie. So,
Okay, I won't marry you, but can I offer one of my grandparents for you to adopt?
No, I'm totally down. Whatever I'm only in it for the passport, and that's that. Those two other lovely Irish gentlemen that you're hearing are Steve and Richie from the What Am Politics podcast. Please identify yourselves with your voices.
Top of the morning. I'm Steve.
No, it's St. Patrick's Day. You can't do that.
I just did.
Oh, no.
Stop pinching me.
You're not going to be allowed back in. And I'm Richie.
Hi, this is the Right Dishonourable podcast. We meet more or less weekly to talk about current events, social issues, and politics.
Can I just say, it's so refreshing to like see a podcast with an actual intro, like a set intro that sets up what the show is, like establishes a precedent. It's, you know, you get a sense of personality as opposed to the series of fever dreams we have every episode where we awkwardly stumble into whatever we're talking about. It's actually quite nice to see.
But then you get to call it like a cold open, and
that's
it's really refreshing.
Yeah, we do it. Yeah.
We decided to kind of formally define the fact that we are a Brexiteer and Remainer podcast because we agree on too much.
Right.
And so it's nice to kind of set that up at the very beginning. But anyway, we're going to be talking about three topics, as we usually do, Jimmy, right?
Yes.
What are we going to talk about? Or do you want me to do it again because you've forgotten?
I remember the first one. I'll do the first one.
You can
follow. So there's been quite a lot, I think it's fair to say, about Russia in the news in the UK in the past week. The allegation from the intelligence services that Russian spies tried to kill a former Russian agent in Salisbury.
Please don't kill us.
Allegedly, yeah. That's the allegation. Although it seems like everyone in the Western establishment is now on board with this, apart from Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah, controversial. So they've ejected 23 UK diplomats, 23 Russian diplomats.
They say diplomats. They were working as, quote unquote, undefined intelligence personnel. That was it.
Yeah, diplomats.
Diplomats.
The very same.
I mean, don't diplomats like collect intelligence as part of their job, roughly? Like, how do you, where's
allegedly,
the line between those two things?
Can you stop, like, making it so that all of these
the UK government's said that they were spies.
Oh, okay, cool. And then we're safe.
Yeah.
We actually had a little interaction earlier. We were downstairs at a coffee shop, and prior to us leaving, this stranger came up with a bag with two cupcakes in it and go, what did she say?
Do you guys want these?
Yes. Yeah, so she's like, I got them for someone, but they're a wanker. And she left on it, and then she put down the two cupcakes and just left.
Did you take the cupcakes?
We threw them out. But maybe that's
because
we've also talked about Russia, so maybe this is
giving people nerve agents is a thing over here now.
So what you're saying is you might have brought nerve agent remnants into Jazz's house.
Potentially. I've just been touching stuff since I got here.
Thanks, guys. Just making sure you touch every surface. After Russia, we're going to be going into the National Geographic, the editor, Susan Goldberg, who's the first ever lady editor in like
the first Jewish person to edit.
Very, very exciting. So she, next month, the National Geographic is having a special based around the concept of race and where kind of like modern day society is when it comes to race. So she has decided to have an editorial where she apologizes for the history that National Geographic has had in the way that it has covered people of color, not just abroad and exoticizing like a lot of tribes and using not the best terminology to describe people from developing countries, but also for the way that the National Geographic has decided to kind of ignore African American people in a lot of its editorial. This is also happens to be the month where the Bristol Post, we don't talk about Bristol very much, but I'm very happy
you brought it up quite a lot.
It's because I'm into it. It's where I'm going to raise my children. So the Bristol Post...
Your half-Irish grandchildren.
Exactly. Ah, half-Irish grandchildren.
That's not a promise. That's just...
So the Bristol Post has also published an editorial apologising for the way that it has been divisive in the way that it's covered the Afro-Caribbean community in Bristol specifically. And we're going to be talking about whether or not media publications should be apologizing for things that have happened in the past, whether or not this actually does anything, whether it means anything. I wonder what Jimmy's going to think. And then finally, we're going to be talking about the gender pay gap. Do you guys want to give us a quick spiel?
Yeah, I think it's something, it's a conversation that's been going on for a while, but it's resurfaced again thanks to The Crown, Netflix's drama about the monarchy. I'm sure Steve will have some comments on that as well. The monarchy part, not the pay gap part. But yeah, it's come up again because Matt Smith has, it's been revealed, not the number he's been paid, but he's been paid more than Claire Foy, I think her name is, who plays the Queen. It's kind of poignant as well, like that the Queen is getting paid less. There's something symbolic there. And I think that's been part of the narrative as well of this particular version. But
Do we need to have watched The Crown in order to care?
I hope not, because I haven't watched it.
No.
Have any of us watched it?
I've watched the 12 episodes of the first season and 4 episodes of the second season.
Okay. So you're a fan, essentially.
I live with people who are fans.
What do you say about Smith's performance is, you know, twice as good as Claire Foy's?
I need to see the sterling amount before I can work out a percentage of how good his performance is.
Right, okay. Sure.
But he's good. But I don't know if he's that good.
Excellent. So we're going to beg you for money. There's going to be a little bit of music. No, don't worry.
I've already taken out my wallet.
Thanks, guys. Means a lot. So we're going to play some music, beg you for money, and then come back and talk about these topics three. Lush.
And Steve's going to sing that music right now.
Oh, big all right.
Jazza here, on the other side of the music, as promised, I'm begging you for money, please, sir. You may have noticed we don't have ads on our podcast. That's because we are completely listener supported, and thank you so much to the people who have been with us and listened to us for over 100 episodes. If you would like to continue to support the podcast and help us out with stuff like web hosting fees and equipment and all of that kind of stuff, then go over to patreon.com/rightdishonorable or just search for Right Dishonorable in the Patreon search bar. It's relatively easy. Thank you so much to the people who currently support us, to our current patrons. They are Ollie, Agatha, Gemma, Matt, Dominique and John. You guys are really helping us out and making this this possible. If you don't want to support us, then that's fine. This is always going to be free. So let's get back to the show. Listen to Jimmy and I talking with some Irish men. Lovely.
So Russia and the UK are kind of having a bit of a Barney at the moment. Oh, bless them.
That's it's a very accurate description.
Yeah, exactly. So the Russians possibly maybe poisoned an ex-spy called Sergei Skripal. No, not definitely. Please don't get us killed. So he was in a branch of... Is it pronounced Zizzy or Zitzy? Can we decide?
I thought it was Zizzy.
I thought it was Zizzy.
But if it's like pizza... two Z's, then it's Zitzy, and it is Zitzy. Italian.
Hmm. It's also the French slang for penis.
Is it?
That's unfortunate.
Nice. Well,
I mean, there's a lot of unfortunate things about this story. That's the most unfortunate. Now I'm sad.
And since then, we've kind of, the UK authorities have found out that the nerve agent used to poison said ex-spy was an artificial agent found and developed in the old Soviet Union.
It can only be made in one factory in central Russia.
Mm-hmm. Novichok 5? Mm. I wrote that down. Don't worry. That's not
fair. Somebody did the research. Trying to show off for the big podcast boys, are we?
I used to, the research I do for Water Politics is get drunk.
Research, so, quote unquote. So Theresa May, who, in case you've forgotten, is still the Prime Minister. She...
Jimmy, you forgot that.
Yeah, Jimmy.
So they're going to follow me around now. The time when I forgot that our Prime Minister was Theresa May.
Yeah, we've only had one female Prime Minister. Idiot.
The week after she resigns, it'll be totally fine to forget about who she is because everybody will. But until then, you have to remember.
Wow.
Exactly. So Theresa May has been doing her job. For a while, suggested that in response to Russians killing an ex-agent on UK soil, that we should withdraw from the World Cup, to which all of the football aficionados went, yeah, right, we weren't going to win anyway. Yeah.
In fairness, it was Bojo that actually proposed that, though.
Oh, really? Excellent. Well, we know that he's in charge of everything.
And haven't they said that definitively that the royal family won't be attending? Like, yes, that's one of the cards they've played.
Yeah. Oh, that'll really
no
smart.
No marks for you, Russia. Actually, if you're going to do a tit for tat, shouldn't UK go over and kill somebody in Russia?
No. I mean,
I'm glad you're proposing this on a different podcast that's not ours.
I'm getting it all out of the way.
Yeah, when we go to our podcast, it's going to be really like reserved.
Exactly. Really measured. Yeah. So speaking of tit for tat, in response, rather than withdraw us from the World Cup, Theresa May has kicked out 23 Russian diplomats, no more, no less. And then Russia have kicked out 23 UK diplomats.
So
no
that number, were they literally just trying to be poetic and go, hey, you know, we're going to match you? Or was it just that we ran the calculations and we have 23?
I think that may have been the UK thing. And then you have to kind of like match them because otherwise
there's no
it's
see
like,
you and raise you.
Yeah. And so since then, we've had like a few people are saying that this is the second coming of the Cold War, which is not an overused metaphor at all. And Corbyn, who is still the leader of the Labour Party, in case anybody forgot, wrote in The Guardian.
Jimmy.
He suggested in an article in The Guardian that Theresa May is rushing ahead of evidence.
What a good joke. Stop flattering your future husband.
And we should really not be jumping to conclusions about this.
He must be the only human being in the Western world saying that. Not even Trump is saying that anymore.
Well, do we think that Theresa May is correct to be retaliating this kind of way? Or do we need to be waiting for to be an actual police investigation?
It took 3 or 4 years. What was the name of the last guy that they poisoned with plutonium?
Litvinenko.
Litvinenko. Yes. It took nearly 4 years to get an answer on that. So you can't wait 4 years again for it to happen. So yeah, no,
weren't they fairly sure, but it was kind of dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
But that's
the 4 year investigation.
That is what a formal police investigation is.
Yeah.
And that, like, I mean, they are, if it's a nerve agent that can only be created in a factory in the middle of Russia and it ends up in Salisbury on the skin of a former Russian agent who flipped and then went over to the UK side.
Yeah, I agree with Steve. It's coincidence.
it was suggested by Corbyn.
It was the Bristolians that done it.
It's always us. So Corbyn actually did, he suggested that there were, Theresa May identified two options for this. And Corbyn tended to agree with her that this was either a crime by the Russian state or the state has allowed for the toxins to slip out of their hands, and he suggested that possibly this could be a mafia takeout. Why are we kind of like negating the idea that it could be the latter of those two?
Well, what is the mafia then as an organization? Like, is it not just another arm of Putin's state force in Russia?
I think we all know that, but I think that we're not allowed to.
It's pretty well established. The only guy still alive and operating in Russia are the guys that Putin wants to be. So if stuff happens, it's because he wants it to happen.
Well, there's kind of an argument with, like, is it some of the Chechnyan sort of guys? He doesn't have, like, they're kind of a wing of Putin's wider circle, but he doesn't have full control of him. Like, was it the leader of the opposition who was killed a couple of years back, Boris? I can't remember his name.
Let's just call him Boris.
Yeah.
Nepsov or something.
No, but now everybody only uses the word Boris. They just think it's Bojo. Yeah.
But do you know, sometimes it's argued that Putin's like henchmen way down below do stuff that he's not fully aware of.
Right. Mm-hmm. Do you think this could be part of that? Or are you just saying it's a possibility?
It's possible. I think it's kind of a distinction without a difference, really.
Right,
I
mean, okay.
It's like the Russians who, you know, Russians or Ukrainian hackers who engage in cyber warfare. They might not be official Russian state personnel, but they're taking their orders from there anyway. So right. What does it matter?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How much do you think we're weakened by the fact that we're currently in negotiations for leaving a big diplomatic... I'm looking at you, Jimmy, because it's your fault. for leaving a big diplomatic kind of like organization like the European Union. Because we've also... We talked about this last week with Rex Tillerson's being fired over tweet. Mm. He was really the only person in the US and the State Department who was kind of bypassing Trump and explicitly saying that the US stood with the UK. And it's taken a while for the White House to come on board as well. Mm. Do we embarrassingly look a little bit weak? As the foreigners in the room, hello guys. what does the UK performance look like here? Am I right to feel slightly embarrassed?
As an Irishman, I would never pass up an opportunity to embarrass the United Kingdom. But I'm actually quite happy with how they've reacted. Obviously, they've kind of taken it as far diplomatically as you can take it. And the next stage after that is something physical, which, mm-hmm. you know, is war. It's not that far. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they come across as being weak. It's the Russian state going too far yet again, because we've seen what they did in the United States last year. They're doing it all across Europe, getting involved in different political campaigns, trying to extend their influence. And now they're so brazen and the balls on Vladimir Putin are so big that he thinks that he can assassinate anybody anywhere in the world.
Who hasn't seen them? Like, with a nerve agent as well. It seems like such an archaic... Like, they're talking about how inefficient it is as a way of...
The guy's daughter...
I mean, and it hasn't worked yet. No, they're still
the guy's daughter, the police officer that helped them, and potentially anybody else that was in the town of Salisbury that day could have been potentially injured and killed.
Mm-hmm.
And the
whole town of Salisbury has basically been said to do a deep clean.
Yeah.
Maybe turn it up to 60 degrees. I was actually,
Febreze some stuff.
Febreze will not do it this time.
Bang, and the nerve agent is gone.
Get out of here, Barry Scott.
Why do I know that name?
Yeah, well, that's really good.
Oh my God.
Advertising in your head. Jesus, I was actually in Salisbury last December because the Terry Pratchett Museum was going on there over winter. And
doing,
I stayed
doing
in...
That's what he says. Reconnaissance.
Combat, please. And I stayed in the Mill Hotel, which is one of the places where they listed that you have to scrub yourself deeply and cleanly if you were there. So, I mean, I didn't meet anybody with Russian accents when I was there, but it's unnerving.
It's, yeah.
Unnerving.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're like, yeah, I don't think that you can describe the UK's reaction as being weak. And I don't really think this is anything that can be tied into Brexit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'd agree with that. Obviously.
It's literally my job to do this.
Because
really,
if anything,
be fair.
Before, when Cameron was trying to get sanctions put onto Russia to retaliate for the Ukraine thing, it was the Germans that were trying to pull them back and make them less severe, and the Eastern European countries who rely
because
on gas.
Because of the amount that they rely on, you said, gas. Yeah.
So, no, I don't think you can tie Brexit or any kind of like accusations of weakness into it. The Corbyn thing is really weird. I don't understand what he's going for. Is it just like his inherent...
It says like it's his job as the opposition to question. He's just questioning everything. That was his quote.
That doesn't seem right.
I think that, I mean, we're pretty anti-Corbyn on this podcast anyway, so, you know, take it from that point of view, but...
Anti? I just think he's an idiot.
That's not a pro stance.
I don't know. I think most politicians are idiots.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he's generally anti-Americanism, at least, and by connection, anti-British sentiment is very much integral to his foreign policy outlook. And so when he's reluctant to condemn the Russians because I think still in his own head, it's still kind of the Cold War. Mm-hmm. And the Russians, even though they're a million miles away from the kind of socialism he wants, are still...
But it's not, you know, it's not a socialist state in any way now. The Russia that exists now is not anything like the USSR have meetings with every now and again. I actually think he's really smart in juxtaposing himself like this, because I think that there is a narrative that you could propose of Theresa May kind of going through the... kind of like stereotype of, oh, I'm going to expel a few Russians, and then the Russians do the same. But then where does she go? I disagree with you, Steve, that this necessarily means that the next step is something physical. I think there's more that you can do in terms of like sanctions of Russians that are here, in terms of the oligarchs that have tons of assets in London. Like, that's something that hasn't really been tapped into or discussed from the Theresa May angle.
True. And I guess the spanner you can throw at them there is that the Tories don't want to do that because they get a lot of money from these Russians.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I don't. I think there's also less of an appetite. I think you can say that Theresa May is kind of playing at being the next Iron Lady, but she's so obviously really bad at playing the Iron Lady and just does not have that amount of gravitas on the world stage.
I think that's a bit unfair. I mean, what is she expected to do in the scenario? Like, she's acting defiantly and strong because that's what you have to do when Russians, you know, release a chemical weapon on your territory.
I agree with you, but I think that Corbyn is clever to kind of make people question whether or not she's actually up to the job of being able to be as tough as she is, and the Conservative Party are saying.
I don't see it as clever.
The focus isn't on that at all, though. Especially from Corbyn's perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't heard any of the narrative saying, oh, look at Corbyn, he's doing a great job pointing out how weak Theresa May's response is. The reaction to Corbyn has been, he thinks that she should be weaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or more cautious is kind more, of like the line.
Is there actually anybody that's claiming that she should be like bringing in super sanctions against the Russians at the moment?
It's been suggested by Corbyn and like some members of the Labour Party.
Corbyn simultaneously thinks that it might not be Russia, but also wants to see heavier sanctions put on Russians in retaliation.
Corbyn's still a pacifist,
isn't he? So like any suggestion of actual violence, he's going to shrink away from.
Yeah, and any chance to like kick some rich Russians out of London.
Yeah, it's fine.
And maybe turn like their mansions into social housing. I mean, I'd be down for that. Move to Chelsea, be cool.
Put yourself on the waiting list.
Yeah. Did you guys know, just kind of wrap this topic up, did you guys know that Russia is having an election tomorrow?
Presidential, you told me about this. Yeah.
I'm
sorry, I didn't realize election. I didn't see the air quotes around election.
So,
and it's actually a two-round system, so technically... If one candidate doesn't get more than 50%, they have to go again with the two that get the most.
Yeah, it's like the French system. No, so Putin is currently, in terms of opinion polls, is at
122%.
3,006.
Wow, that's pretty good.
He's at 65%, like hovering between 65 and 70%. Oh. Yeah.
He's a very bad autocrat these days. Come on.
When they rig the elections, how do they decide what is the right percentage? Because you want it to be... You don't want to be ridiculous.
99.9, you see. Yeah. Right.
That's just like a margin for error.
He's also kicked out two election monitoring groups, international election standards agencies, in the run-up to this election. And I wonder why.
I genuinely wonder why,
because I feel like you don't, with approval ratings, quote-unquote, of 65%, then you shouldn't really need to rig the election.
He kind of is legitimately probably that popular, though. I mean... Mm. He has constructed the Russians.
He's got great pecs.
I mean, that guy can ride a horse and take
peace. He's got a bit of a dad bod, really. It's not like chiseled.
No, but he's got that, like, it's not like disco.
Why am I defending Putin's physique?
Let's get into this.
I've got a great physique. I'm just saying, I don't take my shirt off and get people to take photos. I mean, I do manly things.
He's got that old man strength. Like, it's not disco muscles. It's not like Chris Hemsworth where it's all sculpted. But he can still.
Gravity has happened.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, but he could still beat you up outside of a bar pretty easily.
Yeah, I'm sure he could.
I'm looking at you. I'm not just calling you out. Any one of us. Mm-hmm. Even probably all four of us.
He's a judo master too.
I don't know. I could sit on him.
I think we could all sit on him. that's how we win.
Yeah, that's basically judo, isn't it? Right?
You just sit on your opponent.
So moving on, the National Geographic, that publication that you only ever read on planes, has apologised for the way that it's covered people of colour in its 130-year history. The editor, Susan Goldberg, who's the first female and Jewish editor of the National Geographic, in the run-up to a special issue on race that's coming out in April, has decided to ask a professor of the history of photography, who knew it's a thing, at the University of Virginia to go through their archives and see just how racist the National Geographic actually was. Turns out, super racist.
Yeah. what a job that is. Does he have like a graph he has to fill out and just keep updating?
Each page, racist, not racist. Racist, racist, not racist.
There were some caveats in the essay, but there were some things that they didn't do completely awfully. I can't remember them.
I remember one. We had a photograph of Winnie Mandela, but we didn't explain why it was important back in the 80s.
Yeah, so there were like explanations of how they covered the 1960s apartheid South Africa compared to like the 1970s and how they kind of evolved over that 10-year period to actually mention that there were race tensions in such a nation. Yeah. And also they used like a whole bunch of slurs that were common at the time to describe tribes people. They called Aboriginal Australians like subhuman, I believe it was, or like the savages was the word that they used.
Like classic. Definitively genetically inferior and stuff like
with
that.
With the lowest intelligence.
Yes, lowest, yeah. Like provably lowest intelligence.
Yeah.
The editorial, though, does...
Which we all know is Bristolians.
Yeah.
I read that in the most recent, actually.
I can confirm. Super thick. So the thing is, the editorial also managed to say that and kind of cover its own back slightly by saying that the National Geographic wasn't teaching, but was reinforcing messages that were around at the time. And if you are just kind of like, it's kind of like the Winston Churchill argument of Winston Churchill wasn't racist, everybody was racist then. Is there an argument for saying that, like, does everybody need to apologize for having published anything back then? Because pretty much everything then was explicitly racist.
For Nat Geo, they have like these four pillars where it's like science, geography, and one of them is world culture. So if you're putting yourself forward as like an editorial publication that's writing presumably eloquently about world culture, you would feel like, okay, maybe you will need to go back and audit.
They're really good at finding metaphors for the N-word.
Exactly.
Like after the 1920s when they just used the N-word before
that.
Yes,
of course. Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, like some of these stories are actually from like the 1910s, the 1920s and stuff like that. And actually, scientific racism was a thing then.
Yeah.
Like the scientific justification, pseudo-scientific
justification. Up until World War II, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like, they weren't
being...
And
then the Nazis went and ruined everything.
Just took it too far.
I mean, they weren't exactly being unscientific in the sense of they were following the knowledge, like what the actual academics were producing, which we now know is bullshit, but at the time, you know.
But it's also, I think it's a gradient as it evolved over the decades as well. Like it still would refer to, like they had a habit of their like African Americans whenever they would do features, like they were famously or infamously in laboring positions or like
they were always like servants.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. They're always portrayed in that manner. But then if they were showing people like foreign, they referred to them as like exotic and they were always like naked and there was something very kind of ritualistic and spiritual sometimes about it. It's just the representation in general was just...
Yeah. And then there was kind of like the trope that they used of people from tribes in Africa looking at cameras and marveling shiny technology.
White developed man who comes in. Yeah. And like that trend happened way after like the what we were talking about earlier. Like this is something that's been happening up until the 70s, 80s.
This has obviously been happening, but is it useful to apologise for it?
Well, she's apologising on behalf of the institution of National Geographic. She's not, or the society that runs the magazine. She's not apologising for herself because she had no involvement in this whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it's because it becomes as like part of a commitment to actually... more accurately, more diversely representing non-white Americans in the future.
Yeah,
it makes a bit more sense in that context. Her apologizing in and of itself is a bit silly because it's not really her fault. I mean, it's not her fault at all.
But she is the representative of National Geographic.
Yeah,
if she doesn't apologize,
she does. Yeah.
And like, a lot of the major criticism, which I kind of have issue with the editorial here, it kind of says that we were really bad until 1970.
Yeah.
Then we started treating people of color like actual human beings.
Yeah, there was that line in the article where it's like after 1970, everything seemed like it was a bit okay. It was like, it wasn't really.
And it's kind of like a brushing your hands off of the whole tragedy. And you see similar things with like Justin Trudeau just apologized for like crimes against Native. They're not called Native Americans in Canada. Aboriginal people.
Indigenous.
Thank you. In Canada. And it's like, well, you can apologize, and that's obviously an important step, but unless you're actually making intentional steps to actually improve the situation that still overhangs from those years of like bad portrayals and depression, then what's the point in
apologizing? I think you can draw a line though between an editorial of a magazine making an apology for its racism over the decades, as opposed to the prime minister of a nation who actually has powers to change people's lives. So granted he's making a token apology, but also you'd like to see it followed up with policies that make those people's lives better as a proper apology for all the shit that was done to them by Canada through the decades. Whereas I think the National Geographic one is kind of like a well-meaning gimmick to a large extent.
There's a certain amount of it that feels kind of PR and marketing-y.
Yes. I think
the intent is...
It can't keep on going forever. Eventually people are going to go, okay, that's enough. We don't need every magazine to apologize for all the crap that they did back in the last century, but...
Not all of them have the legacy that Nat Geo does.
Yeah, sure. Nat Geo did it. The New York Times are doing it with obituaries towards women in particular. And granted, that's a well-meaning and good to see thing. But at the same time, you know, when the Telegraph eventually do it for third division football teams that they didn't give proper coverage to, then we've gone too far.
But I think for now it's a good step. It's even for academically, like it's good to see, to go back and see how the evolution of...
I think it is really good that they codified it. They got an actual like smart person to come in and do it.
Right.
I mean, on a cynical level, it's actually quite a good story as well.
It was a really good article.
It was very, very
I have to admit something, that in the paragraph where they were talking about their treatment of the Native Islanders in the Pacific, they said these photographs of Native women were all we did was talk about how beautiful they were. There was a link to the photographs on the thing and I clicked it. And I just, as I clicked it, I was like...
You're part of the problem.
I know for a fact that they can prove that this is going to be the most click link on this article because of arseholes like me.
I would actually argue that unless... So something that I think was missing from this particular editorial was a commitment to change going forward, and kind of like the current problems with depictions of race that you see, especially in American media, and the way that kind of like especially people of color in the US and but also around the world by American media are kind of like misrepresented and exoticized and codified in particular ways. And I wanted to juxtapose this with the Bristol Post editorial that they had.
Bristol keeps coming back.
Hey, I'm really into it. It's where our children are going to grow up. Come on.
Our half Irish, half Bristol.
Yes, exactly.
Lovely beaches, Richie. You're going to love it.
Yeah. It's around like me. They'll burn really quickly, so they won't be going out. Not a lot of sun though in Bristol, I can't imagine.
You live in London.
That's true.
But they kind of, in tandem with apologizing for some particular headlines that ran in the 1990s around like drug gang leaders.
So there was one front page who you explicitly referenced, which is the Faces of Evil front page.
Yeah, that's the one that they actually, and I actually thought it was quite cool of them not to include a link to that front page.
Right, yeah.
So granted, I can understand what it was, but the sensationalist in me was like, I want to see it. Yeah. And
they did show the front page. There was an image of it, wasn't
it? It was the new front page of that edition of the Bristol Post.
Right.
And they kind of like framed it and were like, they had the image of the 96 front page and then said, I'm sorry on the bottom of it.
Well, then I totally take it back.
They're assholes as well. But they explicitly said how they were going to be working with the local mayor, who's a person of color, and working to make sure that they had more BAME representation, because Bristol is one of the most diverse cities outside of London in the UK. It's like 1/5 BAME, which is Black, Asian, Minority Ethnic, for anybody who doesn't know. We do have
I'm sure listeners to this podcast.
We have American listeners, Jimmy. Yeah. We have funny terminology.
We didn't know that's not a term in Ireland.
Oh, really?
I heard it.
Well, you're welcome.
It's because you live in England.
I knew.
You live in Brixton.
Yeah, I still heard it though.
But there's still a huge, and also because Bristol was one of the gateways to It was one of the major engines of colonialism and the slave trade in the UK. It's basically where a lot of the people who ended up being sold came through Bristol, which is why there's such a big Afro-Caribbean community there. And many of them still have hostility towards not just the Bristol Post, but like the wider media. And there's the major music venue there. What's it called? It's named after like a slave owner guy, and they're looking to change that now.
There's a major, I can't remember the name of this guy, probably should look this up, but there's a major slave owner who funded a lot of the
Edward Colston.
Colston. So there's loads of streets named after him. He probably funded like a school or a hospital or something. He's a major entrepreneur.
I wonder about that one actually, because if you were to apply that to the United States, you'd have to rename Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of interesting that the anti-Confederacy thing, given how sort of closely linked it is. I mean, in the Confederates' head, they were actually fighting for the original revolution in some sense. And a lot of the founding fathers did own slaves, as you just alluded to. And yeah, but then they have a completely different legacy because that's the way history went. So, I will say on the Bristol Post thing, the editor, in my opinion, was stupid to apologise for that front page because everything about that front page was accurate. It was a picture of like a dozen black guys who were crack cocaine dealers. They were all convicted. I mean, I personally don't really like the concept of evil, but I can see why you'd apply it to like crack cocaine dealers. That page was fine. What was wrong was the way they covered black people generally.
Yeah.
That's what he should have apologized for. Don't apologize for a single front page that is true.
But I don't think he did just apologize for that single front page. That single front page is often brought up and is symbolic in the Bristolian community about how people of color in the city were covered. And I think it was similar to the National Geographic article where they were saying that, hey, we were a publication functioning in like a racist society and we have been complicit in that racism because we didn't challenge it. Soz lol, essentially.
I mean, it is a bit...
Here's an editorial subscription.
Yeah.
It is a bit odd to apologize really just for essentially just sitting going along with what was going along at the time, if you know what I mean. Like it doesn't make a great, I mean, back to the Churchill thing. I mean, Churchill was a racist in a society where racism was far more prevalent than it is now.
He was like explicitly super racist though. Like even
he was quite
time.
Extreme for his era even, yeah. But
I don't know if you guys seen the coverage of The Darkest Hour went pretty negative in Ireland. A lot of the people brought up about all the bad things that he did to Ireland.
Such as?
We're British.
I don't know any of this.
Yeah, so. I only knew that there was an Irish War of Independence like 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, we're never taught. And I have like a super Irish surname. And I was taught that it was Scottish up until like a couple of years ago.
Was there a big dramatic reveal when you're like, you've been Irish this
dun,
whole
dun,
time?
Dun,
it's
yeah,
like when Harry found out he's a wizard.
Yeah. The very same. It was your actually Irish Hagrid Chaza. Came and flew down.
Oh, you were about to explain it.
Yeah, you're about to explain why Churchill is such a bad guy.
Okay. I do remember most of it I kind of just disregarded because it was just Twitter anger and I don't normally have much time for that.
Twanger.
But I do remember that he sent the black and tans in, and if anybody knows their Irish history because they watched the Michael Collins movie, they were the bad guys in that.
Yeah.
So he was responsible for that.
Ireland's antagonists.
Yeah, there's loads and loads of rebel songs that are great fun to drink when you to sing when you're drunk.
Yeah, all about the black and tans. Yeah.
Oh, the black and tans that came and killed me father.
That's it.
That's our national anthem.
You were talking about wanting a new theme tune, right?
Yeah,
there
no,
you go.
Exactly.
There you go.
I'm just going to click up all of Steve's little ditties.
Going for that Irish passport. Yeah. Exactly.
You have to memorize all of these and sing them to the president to get the passport.
Excellent.
Lena did it excellently.
Yeah, she did a great job.
Can't wait. Shall we move on to the gender pay gap?
Sure.
Cool.
Take it away, Richie.
Hey, I already did the intro at the start. Okay. You go.
Okay, so women are paid less than men, and it's not cool. And in particular, this week, a new story came out to show that the Queen was paid less than the King, even though he's not even the King, he's the Prince Consort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
I want to know, does Prince Philip get paid more than Queen Elizabeth?
She technically doesn't have a wage.
All the money, like from the Crown Estates and various other things, goes to Elizabeth, and then she has to distribute it among the royal family.
Herself.
Yeah, so
they all come in, they all line up, and she's like, "There's 20."
My face on this one.
She makes it talk like a little puppet. Yeah. She's sitting on a pile of money.
Roughly speaking.
I thought that was pretty. It was like the cherry on the top of all the stories that were coming out. I think HSBC also revealed. Everyone's kind of doing their own internal investigations and revealing how skewed the figures are.
So UK companies, any UK company with over 250 employees has to.
It's
legal.
So there's going to be about 9,000 reports.
Wow.
Come out.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of paperwork. Social scientists must be jizzing themselves.
Oh, so much fun.
All that data. HSBC were paying dudes 60% more than women, which is incredible.
60?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Generally, though, you find in the companies that have already released data, if you account for the roles that men and women fill, there usually isn't very much of a gap. The gap really exists because men are in more senior roles.
Mm-hmm. And they've been around longer. That was the excuse given by Aviva, who is an insurance company that also released its data. I don't think it was quite as bad as HSBC, but it was something like between like 30 and 40% difference in what men and women are paid. Mm. But then we also still know, because I've done, I haven't done, but people have done multivariate analyses.
he got it in.
So what is a multivariate analysis?
That's when you consider the effects of different variables on whatever it is you're trying to measure. So for example, you can talk about the gender pay gap, which is literally men paid more than women. We know that that's like clear on the surface. But then if you consider stuff like how much what types of jobs that they have, how long they've been in those positions, personality types, etc., 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 you get a more nuanced kind of like view of what that's like.
Discrimination's a factor, but it's a factor among
you can do those kinds of analyses, and people have estimated that the gender pay gap, if you take into consideration all of those extra things, is about 5%.
No, but that's the technical term I want to use. That's a load of bollocks, because the discrimination factor comes into creating those other variables as well. Mm. Like women are not in senior positions because of discrimination.
Yes. Right, exactly. Yeah. And also,
I mean, women are traditionally also in less senior positions, partly because they've got less appetite for those kind of roles. So like the sort of jobs where you have to work, say, 100 hours at a bank on Canary Wharf, men are more inclined to do those roles.
Are you being serious?
He is being serious. Welcome to the Right Dishonorable podcast.
I would utterly disagree with that.
You think there's absolutely no difference in like appetite for different types of work between men and women on average?
I want to know what basis you're making that judgment on. Is it because you see men in that role now, and that's
if you ask men and women, like say how much they prioritize work compared to family, say women at least state that they have more of a priority for family life than men do. But then
we still know that women who make the choices that mean that they don't have to take into consideration family life are still paid less than men.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not saying that isn't mm-hmm. still a thing. I'm just saying if you ask men and women what their priorities are in life, you get different responses. Now, you could argue that that's because of social pressures. That's
because of the patriarchy.
It might be true. It might also be true that it's biological factors. So
biological, like such as
Jimmy's a little bit of a biological determinist. So I have issues with there are generally different types of roles that men and women end up choosing, and it is because of social pressures and because of social norms, but it's also because we decided as societies to award male work more than female work.
Sure.
So jobs that involve more empathy, for example, tend to be less paid, not only because they're less profitable. There's a really good example computer coders were originally mainly female staff. It was seen as an administrative role akin to a secretary.
I've seen Hidden Figures.
It's Hidden Figures, essentially.
Is Hidden Figures a documentary or?
No, it's an Oscar movie from last year about the African-American women in working for NASA, who were mathematicians. But then by the end of the movie, they've installed a computer and the same women are transferring their pen and paper into coding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So women were the original coders. Also, like examples of Bletchley Park in the UK and the war effort, that kind of stuff. And because it was a role done by majority women. It was very, very low paid work compared to a lot of other male roles in similar, in the same institution. And then as that became a more male dominated role, because there were more men in computing and mathematics that would then transfer in academics and who would then transfer over to these roles, the amount of money that programmers got paid went up in line with the number of men who were in that profession. And now women are paid within programming, even when we do a multivariate analysis, Jimmy, are paid 30, like it's one of the largest pay gaps. There's a 30% pay gap within programming.
I mean, you say that as though I don't think discrimination is a factor.
No. I just like giving you
I think it is a factor. It's just one among
you mean on the macro level, we shouldn't be waving our hands as much.
Pretty much. Okay. I mean, to take it back to the original thing we were talking about, The Crown.
Yeah.
Entertainment is a particularly bad industry to actually talk about gender pay gaps, I think, because although it is visible, a lot of payment of stars, quote unquote, is based on profile. And I don't really know how they quantify this sort of thing.
Right.
Presumably somebody somewhere thinks that Matt Smith is worth more than
so the producers. What the producer said was because of his notoriety from doing Doctor Who, which is like a institution, he warranted more because of his profile compared to Claire Foy, who had, I think, only done one prior movie, which was
this
huge.
Is kind of her breakout this, thing.
You could
it,
define yeah. it as her break. But Matt Smith is not like, he's good, but he did Doctor Who, but then he did two other titles before The Crown, which
you told me he was in Terminator Genesis, which I've watched and didn't know he was in.
Yeah, exactly. You were like, who was he in that? So
there's a movie called Terminator Genesis.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Arnie's back and he's old now. Yeah. It's not adorable.
No, to be honest, that was my reaction to the performance as well. I was like, no, he's tried his best.
He's also in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Matt Smith, not Arnie.
I also agree with Jimmy that this is a really bad kind
did
of
you
like
just
example.
Grimace as you said that
every time
so you can hear it in the audio.
I think that it's correct to say that this in isolation is a really bad example of kind of like the gender pay gap in the entertainment industry.
Even though
I think objectively Matt Smith is a bigger star. He has audience pull and therefore probably should be paid more than her.
Okay, but there's also an argument in terms of I can see the logic where that's coming from, but that's based on say season one presumptions. Claire Foy won Golden Globe. She won numerous other accolades. Her acting talent, even just looking at it, like my own opinion, and I've heard other people agree, she's phenomenal. Like you cannot fault her acting in that show. Her
acting
is great.
Matt Smith is just
Matt Smith's good as well. But I'm not.
But he's never been. He was never nominated for any awards.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Presumably, Claire Foy gets way more screen time as well.
Way more work to do.
Significantly more. And that was the other point I was going to make. Even just from a work perspective. So whatever about that argument applied to season one, going into season two, she's got the accolade. She's clearly got the draw now because she is one of the best parts from season one. And so is it not an issue?
Presumably she can sort of name her price at this point.
No, she's finished. No. She's been recast.
Season three and four, they're going to, they're
That's
jumping.
Why they released the figures.
Yeah.
But Olivia Colman, who is a huge star in her own right.
Yeah. Well,
have they cast Prince Philip? Older Prince Philip?
I don't know. I've only heard the queen.
Olivia Colman is going to be the queen. Hopefully it'll be Matt Smith again and he gets paid less.
just keep paying him less.
And he has to go and do old face makeup, so he has to work like twice as many hours.
Mm. Mm-hmm. There's also another example in the entertainment industry. Again, I know we say it's not like the best indication of it, but there's something about it. It's
very visible.
It's very visible. And there's kind of a clarity to it where it's almost like a one-to-one thing where you can kind of just point at people, famous people in their faces.
Famous Willie, exactly. Which is paid more?
Yeah, there was All the Money in the World, the Ridley Scott film with Kevin Spacey. He got kicked, you know, he got booted from it because of all of the...
Because he's a dick.
Yeah, there we go. and so they had to do...
I was watching Baby Driver last night and there's so many lines that can be inferred as him being a pervert in it that it just totally changed the tone of the movie. So now I realize that the best thing to do is to go back and rewatch Kevin Spacey's movies and just laugh when he says something that can be twisted as him being a pervert.
You think he wants to be caught? He's like seeding all these...
You should have seen the balls on this kid. And we were like...
but make sure you pirate them so he doesn't get any royalties.
Yes.
I'd never pay for movies.
No.
Come get me, Weinstein.
No, do not invite him.
Oh no, you got me.
There was a Ridley Scott movie that he was supposed to be in and he was replaced by, who's he replaced by?
Christopher Plummer.
Yeah, Christopher Plummer. And they had to do 10 days of reshoots with other cast members to just kind of fill in the gaps and get
Mark
like
Wahlberg.
Yeah, so they had Mark Wahlberg and they had Michelle Williams.
Yeah, to be honest, I'd never heard of her.
You never heard of Michelle Williams?
You'd know her if you
saw her. She's married to Heath Ledger. She works a lot.
Yeah, you'd know her. You'd know her.
Oh, she's a great worker. Good worker. No,
as in to say that like she's been in a fuck ton of things. Once you start listening to me, you're like, oh yeah. Mm. I think it's just her name. She's got a really forgettable name.
Michelle Williams, I'm pretty sure, is the third member of Destiny's Child that nobody remembers as well.
You see, there you go.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure a profile point of view, having a very forgettable name is a drawback. Yeah, yeah, right. Said.
Yeah, she should have called herself like something insane that doesn't make any sense, like Renee Zellweger or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Some good SEO.
Yeah, Kate Blanchett. Loads of consonants there. You're not going to forget that.
Yeah, exactly.
So are we going to finish this example at some point?
Yeah, maybe not.
This is your show. We're just going to ramble on for ages.
This feels more like what I'm now. But when they had 10 days of reshoots, Mark Wahlberg got paid $1.5 million. He negotiated $1.5 million for those, specifically for those 10 days. Mm-hmm. 10 days. Whereas Michelle Williams got the
minimum
payment. Yeah, it's like it's slightly above minimum. It's like $80 per day for the 10 days.
So that's weird.
Which is defined by the unions. It's like you have to pay.
And they're represented by the same company.
And they're represented by the same company.
So weird.
That is really weird.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, there was a lot of, obviously, lashback about this and Mark Wahlberg and his talent agency.
Backlash.
Sorry?
Backlash. I like lashback. I think we can remember that.
Did you? What? Were you confused as to what I thought?
No, you said lashback.
Okay, but they donated $2 million to the
Time's Up campaign.
Time's Up campaign.
Why didn't they donate $2 million to her?
She was thinking it, but not saying it.
They technically did it in her name, so I wonder, could she go in and go, I think I left a check in here earlier. Here's my name.
I think that again. This is why I think that entertainment is a really bad example here. Like, obviously, there are more high-paid male actors because...
I'd love to see how it's done with Game of Thrones, because I think we can all agree the surviving people that are still acting in Game of Thrones have their profile from Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I would love to see how much those guys, because it's like pretty much 50-50 women and men there as well.
I think they're pretty transparent about their figures. We could look into that.
We should have.
We should have. If we were better prepared, we should have.
It seems like with a conventional job, because it's far more competitive, people move jobs and stuff, it's far easier to say what...
I know, those Hollywood actors have it so easy.
I mean, relatively speaking, yeah, but also like, how do you say what the value of Brad Pitt starring in your film is?
I can't put a price on
it's
that.
It's not the amount that they get paid. They get paid ridiculous amounts of money. I think that is objectively insane to pay someone like Mark Wahlberg $1.5 million
for 10 days.
It is insane. I mean, that's kind of the problem, though, is like, you know, overpaid female actress is underpaid compared to her even more overpaid male colleague. It's
it helps to look at like this as a case study in isolation, just these two figures, you know what I mean? If we start throwing all these other data points in from other like crazy over the top numbers, I think, but looking at just as a specific example of Mark Wahlberg, who was able to negotiate $1.5 million for 10 days work versus,
but it was they represented by the same agency, and this agency decided to fight for an extra fee for Mark and not for Michelle Williams.
Yeah,
Mark, because like we want to first. Yes.
We've had a guest give us anecdotes about Mark Wahlberg. Okay.
We have a connection.
He likes quiche.
He didn't eat the quiche in the end.
But he used to last for it.
Yeah, that's true. Check it out.
That story's not going anywhere.
What do you guys think about Inclusion Rider and that?
Oh, that was the thing from the Oscars.
So yeah. Frances McDormand, who won Best Actress or Best Female Actor for her role in Three Billboards Out of Ebbing, Missouri. And she mentioned, just literally went, Inclusion Rider, and then left.
Yeah.
And then everybody Googled it. And it basically means that stars will have minimum criteria for the numbers of ethnic minorities, of women, of queer people on whatever film working on.
Writers in the past were they ever so all encompassing to include stuff like that? I thought writers in the past were always just the things they want to have around them when they go into a film. Or is this like a redefining of what's a writer?
What's just writer?
Like an actor's writer.
It's like, I want a bowl of Smarties.
Red M&M's.
Yes, that's a famous example. Yeah. It's like, Aerosmith, no green M&M's.
I need 10% of the people around me to be LGBTQ+. I want 40% to be
LGBTQ+. Hands up the gays. Okay. Hands up the people of, okay. Well, I should be able to see this, but I still want your hands up.
So is this now a redefining, I guess, of that, or is this something that's kind of already been around?
So this it's up until this point kind of been an academic suggestion of how to increase diversity, not just in front of the camera, but behind it as well, because you can have a diverse cast, but then everybody making the film can still be like white middle-class men.
Yeah.
And this is kind of meant to try and make sure that all levels of the entertainment industry are more diverse, based on the fact that some of the people who have said that they would do it are John Boyega from Star Wars and Michael B. Jordan, who was most recently in
Black Panther.
He's very sexy.
Did you hear about the kid and the retainer from this movie? So there's a guy, an orthodontist who tweeted out a story that he had fitted a girl, I think she was like 12 or 13 or something like that, with a retainer, and she went to see Black Panther, and in the scene where Eric Killmonger takes off his top, you know, for the fight, and he reveals himself all his glory for the first time, she bit through her retainer. And this orthodontist tweeted it out, because it's like a funny story that she bit through this solid retainer that's not supposed to break in your mouth. And Michael B. Jordan replied going, "Hey, I'll pay for that."
What a legend.
So it's my pecs.
That's
These actors have said that they're going to try and they're going to include these in contracts that they have in the future.
Mm.
And it's kind of a way of specifically maybe dealing with not just the gender pay gap, but with gaps in representation across all identities and minorities, specifically in the entertainment industry. I don't know how we do that as effectively without quotas.
I don't have a writer in my job.
When I come for my annual review, if I was to demand that from my line manager, I don't know how far I'd get.
I mean, I for one cannot wait to replace Jimmy with a queer black woman. That's going to be great.
I mean, all I need to do is redefine and then we'll be sorted.
We're not having this conversation again. Shall we, on that note.
Nice dreads, Jimmy.
I'm shutting this down now. Thank you so much, guys, for coming and chatting with us. Where can I find you on the interwebs?
I'm glad you said internet, because whenever we have guests, we always say, "Oh, where can we find you?" And it always feels so creepy.
Down the road.
Exactly.
It's okay. We're in Jimmy's house. Jazz's house.
We're at
whatampolitics.com.
Whatampolitics on Twitter or Facebook. That's the beauty of having a terrible name like Whatampolitics. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of competition, given it's like grammatically incorrect.
I actually quite like the name. I know you guys are like, I think it's terrible.
No, I think it's the best worst name or the worst best name. That's where it sits in my mind.
Yeah, no, once I heard it, it's hard to describe it because it was facial reactions, but it was like,
That's generally. It was born out of, I was drunk when I came up with it, and it kind of shows.
Drunk in Arizona, that's where the best things come from.
Yeah.
We are also about to record an episode of What Am Politics with you guys about our specialist topic.
What? That wasn't our writer. Oh. Sorry.
Right. Well,
you also been.
I'm just going to go to the pub alone. Yeah. But if you guys search for What Am Politics, you can hear me and Jimmy talk about Brexit again.
Mm. Are you excited for that, or do you feel this is like a prequel?
We're kind of dead inside,
really.
Like, generally, but specifically,
we're still very much in our respective camps, but we're just fed up.
Both of you are disappointed.
That's the best
thing about Brexit. Nobody's happy.
No one's happy.
I was very mild Brexit when the vote happened, and I've increasingly become more extreme. Mm-hmm. Probably for talking to this guy.
In spite of,
I've always been an EU shill, and that's going to just be part of my identity until I die.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right, awesome. Leave us a review on iTunes. We got some and they were nice. Thank you very much. We'll read them out if you give them to us. We didn't plan to look at them this week, so we haven't got any to say.
You can make one up.
I think it's kind of self-masturbation to read out your own reviews.
Self-masturbation.
As opposed to, that was bad English.
Right, so I'm shutting down this episode now.
We get so few reviews that we have to follow us, when we
follow
when we
us
can,
on
you know.
Twitter. Like us, give us stars. Okay, bye. Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Leave a review.
Solo masturbation.